Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, September 17th, 2020. We'll start with an article on the front page headlined, College Sports, Illinois AD, This is a Day We Can Smile, Big Ten Reverses Field, Football Coming in October, by Joey Wagner, Champaign. On August 11th, Lovey Smith sat in his office and looked into his computer screen for a press conference, Life in 2020 During a Global Pandemic, and tried to answer questions the best he could following the postponement of the Big Ten football season. There was disappointment for everyone involved following 5 days of training camp, but Smith's focus was to keep his team together, knowing well enough that eventually football would be played again, and Smith, the Illinois football head coach, liked his chances when that time came. In our minds right now, look out college football when we do get a chance to play, Smith said 6 weeks ago. On Wednesday, after months of infighting, statements, rallies, lawsuits, meetings, rumors, and a call from President Donald Trump, the Big Ten announced a unanimous reversal of its decision and will play an 8-week plus one football season beginning October 23rd, 24th. The big change that allowed the reversal came with daily antigen testing, enhanced cardiac screening for myocarditis, and an enhanced data-driven approach when making decisions about practice and competition. The vote to postpone the season in August was 11-3 in favor of postponement. We have had a number of hard days over the last 6 months, and this is not one of them, said University of Illinois Athletics Director Josh Whitman. This is a day we can smile and feel good about the decision we've made and the excitement that I hope we've created among our fans across not just institutions, but all 14 member institutions here in the Big Ten, and certainly for our student athletes. No spring season as was originally proposed, no season beginning on or near Thanksgiving. The Big Ten will play in the fall, and suddenly, the team that Smith has publicly lauded as the best in his tenure at Illinois, he's entering his fifth season after playing in a bowl game last year, will have a chance to play football. A schedule has yet to be released, but Illinois figures to play six division games and 2 non-division games at stadiums with no general ticket sales, though the conference will try to accommodate for players' family at home and away games. The plan is to play games on college campuses. Smith said the team is back to a 20-hour-per-week model for practices. You can imagine the excitement the players have right now, Smith said Wednesday during a Zoom press conference. It's a little bit different practicing when you know you're getting ready to play a football game. For us, it's just started. It's eventually about putting a good product on the football field. There's still a lot of work for us to do and a lot of responsibility placed on us to do what we're supposed to do off the football field, which gives us a chance to play. We cherish that. There's a lot of excitement, but can't wait to get ready to play some football. University of Illinois Chancellor Robert Jones, who voted to postpone the season ahead of the August 11th announcement, said the 2 key components were the rapid response daily antigen testing and more information about myocarditis, a rare heart inflammation, and its prevalence in people who have tested positive for COVID-19. The Big Ten announced procedures to test for myocarditis, which Jones said was only beginning to make its way onto the radar when the postponement was announced, including comprehensive cardiac testing. The testing includes labs and biomarkers, ECG, echocardiogram, and a cardiac MRI. Following cardiac evaluation, student athletes must receive clearance from a cardiologist designated by the university for the primary purpose of cardiac clearance for COVID-19 positive student athletes. The earliest a student athlete can return to game competition is 21 days following a COVID-19 positive diagnosis. In addition to the medical protocols approved, the 14 Big Ten institutions will establish a cardiac registry in an effort to examine the effects on COVID-19 positive student athletes. The registry and associated data will attempt to answer many of the unknowns regarding the cardiac manifestations in COVID-19 positive elite athletes. We made the best decision that we could with the information that we had on hand back on August 11th, Jones said. wouldn't think about reversing that decision based on the information we had at that time. It was the right decision to make, given the gaps that could not give me, as the chancellor of this university, the great confidence sending hundreds of our young men out to play football that they could do it safely and it wouldn't create a bigger problem for the broader university community. Now, with this new information, it was very, very clear that a lot of those concerns have been mitigated. Stood by the original decision we made. It was the right decision to make, and as I said, we were very, very clear. We weren't canceling the season. We were postponing it. Both Jones and Illinois Associate Athletic Director for Sports Medicine, Randy Ballard, called the antigen testing, which will likely include a nasal swab and will be supplemented with the university's robust saliva testing, a game changer. To be able to identify someone who is infected before they can possibly infect someone else is huge, Ballard said. The Illini practiced on Wednesday under the 20-hour-per-week mandate, and more information about when training camp will be rebooted after an abrupt stop on August 11th is not yet available. Eventually, a schedule will come out, which figures to have 6 division games and 2 cross-division games, along with a championship week that will have the top seeds in each division play, as well as number 2 versus number 2, number 3 versus number 3, and so on. In theory, the conference will still be eligible to participate in the 4-team college football playoff and any potential bowl games. Last weekend, the Big Ten sat on the sideline while the ACC and Big 12 began their season. The beginning of the SEC season is still more than a week away. Even without general ticket sales and a mostly empty Memorial Stadium, Wednesday's announcement opened the door for a bit of fall normalcy in a year that's been anything. Decatur Business, Decatur Rising. Community celebrates Inc. Spot Mission to Grow Small Business by Danette Beckett, Decatur. Decatur is open for business and giving budding entrepreneurs a hand up to make their business dreams a reality is the mission of the Inc. Spot, the first minority-owned business incubator in the region that celebrated a groundbreaking Wednesday. This is office space, said Inc. Spot co-founder Corey Walker. But this is going to be on steroids times 10. The Inc. Spot, located at 269 West El Dorado Street, is designed to help the community and businesses in central Illinois with ongoing training, advising, and on-site support for entrepreneurs and developing businesses. According to Walker, renovations will take place in phases. The first phase will hopefully be completed by November, allowing the first occupants to join the incubator offices. The renovation of the former Central United Methodist Church is expected to create 30 construction jobs. Once fully operational, the Inc. Spot is expected to hire 5 permanent employees. The effort is being spearheaded by the Black Chamber of Commerce of Illinois, of which Walker is president, and the Greater Decatur Black Chamber of Commerce, and made possible through a grant from the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity. Benny Smith, owner of Property Smith LLC in Decatur, understands the importance of collaboration in bringing a business to fruition. His business specializes in home renovations. Early on, Smith learned the struggles of competing with larger companies. Opportunities are scarce and hard to come by, he told those gathered for the ceremony. I didn't really see a lot of collaboration in Decatur, so I made it my point to try to collaborate with as many people as I can. He said the Inc. Spot will be a valuable one-stop shop to develop those collaborations. When it does happen, the footwork will already be in place, Smith said. You just press that button. The Inc. Spot will provide much of the needed assistance in business structure, accounting, bookwork services, in-house educational seminars and workshops, a fully equipped business center, boardrooms, event space, and office space. Our aim is to ensure that new businesses have the resources and opportunities to learn the business world and be competitive in this special market, said Tamara Fuller, co-founder of the Inc. Spot. According to Fuller, Decatur was ideal for the business incubator, and it was the right time, she said. The Chamber board members saw the spirit and innovation in people ready to start their own businesses, Fuller said. Aaron Guthrie, director of the Illinois Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity, joined the founders during Wednesday's groundbreaking ceremony. This is going to create such important economic opportunities for Decatur and small businesses and entrepreneurs, she said. It will provide a place for business owners and entrepreneurs to get the support they need from the ground up. Community members, including Decatur Julie Moore Wolf, are looking forward to the incubator reaching its full potential. Decatur can grow its own opportunities if given the tools and the ability to get together and try and figure it out, she said. It's all about this community, our residents. Our community's history is founded on entrepreneurs, said Nicole Bateman, president of the Economic Development Corporation of Decatur-Macon County. Bateman reminded the crowd of Decatur's history and the beginnings of nearby Mueller Company and A.E. Staley Manufacturing Company, now Tate & Lyle. The incubator business will include interactions with students at Millikan University. Educational programs will be available for the students as well as entrepreneurs. It's a space where people are going to get together, educate each other, support each other, empower each other, Najiba Benabes, Millikan's Dean of Tabor School of Business, said. Spaces like Ink Spot are going to make our community stronger. A few years ago, Decatur had a business incubator located on Imboden Drive, south of the city. It wasn't working and wasn't the model that we wanted, said City Manager Scott Wrighton. The city wanted to continue promoting small businesses through a business incubator. The previous Christian Education building, attached to Central United Methodist Church on El Dorado Street, was ideal for the future business incubator, Wrighton said. In the transaction involving the church-owned property, the African American Cultural and Genealogical Society next door was able to purchase its building. I see Decatur rising, Walker said. We have an amazing opportunity to take a chance. Decatur is open for business. Coroner's inquest. Jury. Toddler was playing with matches before fire. By Tony Reed. Decatur. A coroner's jury returned a verdict of accidental death Wednesday in the case of Elena Nicole Jarnigan after hearing the Bethany 4-year-old choked to death on fumes and smoke from a fire she started while playing with matches. Elena was found in bed under the covers on the afternoon of August 21st by her mother after she was alerted by the child's father who had smelled smoke. The mother grabbed her daughter out of the room, but it was too late to save her, the Macon County coroner's jury was told. Sean Jung, a special agent with the State Fire Marshal's Division of Arson Investigations, said he found burn matches at the fire scene in a closet adjacent to Elena's bedroom. But mystery surrounds where the matches came from and a lighter that fell through a hole burned in the floor. Jung said her father smoked, but said he didn't use matches and hadn't seen that particular lighter before. Jung said it looks like the fire took hold, burning stuffed toys and clothes, and Elena got into bed and hid under the blankets before quickly being overcome with fumes and smoke. The jurors were clearly troubled by the circumstances of the girl's death and asked many questions about the sequence of events. Jung said that Elena and her 3-year-old brother were taken upstairs in their 2-story home about 12 p.m. for naps. The father was taking a nap downstairs, and their mother was looking after another 2-year-old child she was babysitting in the downstairs master bedroom. Jung said Alec Jarnigan woke up in the afternoon and smelled smoke, alerted his wife, and then went downstairs because he thought it might be coming from the basement. Ashley Wood took the 2-year-old outside before dashing upstairs to check on the children. She detected a strong odor of smoke coming from Elena's room, said Jung. She opened the door and was just hit with a large volume of smoke. She went in, it was all by feel, she couldn't see, and she went straight to Elena's bed and felt her under the cover. So she grabbed Elena and exited the room. Jung said she woke her son and carrying Elena took them both downstairs. She called 911 in what Jung described as quite hysterical state, while Elena's father went outside and started cardiopulmonary resuscitation on his daughter. He was still doing that when Bethany Fire Chief Michael Jennings, who arrived within 2 minutes of the call and is a trained paramedic, took over the CPR. Day told jurors an autopsy showed Elena died of carbon monoxide poisoning, and there were no signs of other injuries or foul play. Questioning Jung, the coroner asked, "So, if Elena were in bed, possibly dozing or even awake, within a matter of seconds or a minute, she would probably have been rendered unconscious and unable to do anything to assist herself?" "Yes, sir," Jung replied. The jury also returned a verdict of accidental death in the case of Long Creek man Richard E. Weller, who died in the early morning hours of August 9th when he lost control and was thrown from his motorcycle. He was later found to have a blood alcohol level almost twice the legal limit for driving. Giving evidence, Macon County Sheriff's Office Deputy Byron Ebert said the crash happened in the 1500 block of West Elwin Road in rural Macon County, and he had been the first officer on scene at 12:20 a.m. He said he found the motorcycle on its side and Weller, 67, lying about 20 feet from it. Ebert said he administered CPR shortly before Decatur Ambulance Service personnel arrived and took over, one of their paramedics later telling him that Weller was dead. Ebert said the motorcycle had failed to negotiate a curve and skidded for some 250 feet, with Weller being thrown up to 100 feet before he hit the road and died from massive impact trauma to his head and neck. Ebert told the jury that alcohol was probably a factor in the crash, along with a car tire that had been fitted to the rear of the motorcycle. Ebert said car tires have a flat profile instead of the curved profile of motorcycle tires, which are shaped that way to make it easier to lean the machine into curves and turns. Gas line repairs will close portion of Mount Zion Trail. Herald and Review, Mount Zion. Gas line repairs will cause a portion of the Mount Zion bike trail to be closed starting at 7 a.m. Thursday. The closed portion will be between North Public Works Lane and West Side Drive. Officials said it is unclear how long the path will remain closed. Local and state. Man denies faking robbery to explain wound. Drake is accused of accidentally shooting himself through hand. By Tony Reed, Decatur. Avery E. Drake is accused of accidentally shooting himself through the hand in Decatur and then lying about it by claiming he was robbed when police arrived to question him in the hospital. Drake, 21, appeared in Macon County Circuit Court Wednesday and entered not guilty pleas to charges of reckless discharge of a firearm, aggravated unlawful use of a weapon, and armed violence. He also denies a charge of dealing in cannabis illegally after Decatur police searched his car parked in a Decatur Memorial Hospital parking lot and found more than 100 grams of the drug and a digital scale. Giving evidence at a preliminary hearing, police officer Jacob Stewart said Drake had at first invented a story about being held up and robbed by an assailant who shot him through the left hand. But, questioned by Macon County State's Attorney Jay Scott, Stewart said that story fell apart when a witness who had been with Drake said the robbery never happened. The witness said Avery had pulled out a semi-automatic handgun while riding in a car, and the weapon had discharged as he was playing around with it. Stewart said officers later searched the vehicle and found blood spatter evidence on the passenger side door, bearing out the version of events given by the witness. The cannabis, Stewart said, was found in 4 bags in the trunk, and the amount of the drug and the presence of the scale was consistent with the activities of a drug dealer. A large amount of loosely hanging dryer sheets were located in the map pocket behind the driver's seat of the vehicle, Stewart added in a sworn affidavit about Drake's arrest. Due to my police training and experience, I know this is a tactic used to mask the smell of raw and burnt cannabis. A gun holster was also found in the vehicle, but no weapon. Stewart said the witness thought Drake had thrown the gun out the window as the witness drove him to hospital. Judge James Coryell found probable cause to try Drake and scheduled a pretrial hearing for October 6th. That's the same date Drake has another pretrial hearing set for an unrelated charge of obstructing justice, to which he has also pleaded not guilty. That charge relates to the death of Drake's stepbrother, Jason A. Goodbread, 21, who was shot December 5, 2019, while staying in a Decatur hotel room. Prosecutors allege 17-year-old Bryant A.L. Lowe was messing around with a handgun when it went off, and he faces a charge of involuntary manslaughter. Drake was charged after police said he witnessed the shooting but claimed to know nothing about it. Drake is being held in the Macon County Jail with bail set at $250,000, meaning he must post $25,000 to bond out. COVID, local, state. Most of state seeing positivity rates declining. Macon County reports 31 new COVID cases. By Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Coronavirus infection rates appear to be declining in most parts of Illinois, including two regions that are currently under enhanced mitigation measures, such as the closing of bars and restaurants to indoor service, state officials said Wednesday. In Region 7, which includes Will and Kankakee counties, the rolling average test positivity rate fell to 6.4%, according to the latest data. That's a tenth of a point below the 6.5% benchmark that would allow for the lifting of those restrictions. IDPH will continue to watch that positivity over the next few days. And if that trend holds for 3 days, we will remove the resurgence mitigations and return the entire region to phase 4 of the Restore Illinois plan, Pritzker said. In Region 4, which includes the Metro East area across the river from St. Louis, the rolling average test positivity rate stood at 8.9%. That's still above the 8% threshold that triggers the enhanced mitigation efforts, but well below the 9.6% rate the area recorded just 3 days earlier. The statewide positivity rate stood at 3.7% as of Wednesday, an increase of 0.1% from the day prior. In Macon County, health officials announced 31 new cases of COVID-19, bringing the county total to 1,293 since the start of the pandemic. In Shelby County, 13 more residents have tested positive, bringing the county total to 328 confirmed cases. Statewide, the Illinois Department of Public Health on Wednesday reported 1,941 new confirmed cases of COVID-19 over the previous 24 hours, bringing the statewide total since the pandemic began to 266,151. The department also reported an additional 35 virus-related fatalities, bringing the statewide death toll to 8,367. Store closing doesn't mean the end of Simply Sweet Cakery in Mount Zion. By Danette Beckett, Mount Zion. Customers will no longer be able to stop by Simply Sweet Cakery, Inc., located at 1330 Illinois Highway 121 in Mount Zion, for their sugary fix. The last day for in-store customers will be September 26th. The space won't remain empty for long. Wildflower Artisan Bakery and Cafe will expand its business by moving into the Simply Sweet building. The cake shop has been open for business for more than 4 years. On her Facebook page, owner Christy Schrock cited family and the stress of running a business as the reasons for closing the shop's doors. My main focus has always been making this business work for not only myself, but also my family. And it unfortunately doesn't anymore, she posted. I've decided to make some changes so I can continue doing what I love to do instead of slowly burning myself out. Instead of owning a storefront, Schroth will be opening a cake studio. Popular store items will be available through orders. For more information on the current status of the business or to inquire about special orders, visit Simply Sweet Cakery, Inc. Facebook page. 1,000 Rubber Ducks Ready for Hardin Race by Dylan Suttles, The Telegraph, Alton. Hardin. Even with the pandemic, some groups are finding ways to host annual events to their fullest extent. One such event is the 4th annual Calhoun County Duck Race, planned 10:30 a.m. to 4 p.m. October 4th by St. Norbert School in Hardin. The event came to life in 2016 when a parent of a student suggested it. Within about 14 days, we had a duck race, said Danielle Hurley, a SNS Support Club board member. Despite this year's pandemic, the Support Club has already sold enough tickets for more than 1,000 ducks to be placed in the Illinois River. It will be quite a sight to see, Hurley said. Because the event takes place outside, the Support Club received permission from the Calhoun County Health Department to host the event. The race will send ducks through the entire riverfront area on Water Street in Hardin, providing ample space for spectators to practice social distancing. There will also be food and drinks served to go. The ducks will be dropped from the Joe Page Bridge over the Illinois River at 2 p.m. The winner of the race will receive a cash prize worth 10% of the ticket sales. Last year's winner received more than $1,000. Following the duck race, there will be the Golden Duck Race. That winner will receive a cash prize worth 50% of ticket sales. Hurley said that last year the golden ducks were hard to come by. Ducks can be purchased for $5 each at 10:30 a.m. on October 4th or by calling Hurley at 618-576-2828. Quart packs of 6 ducks are offered for $25, and flocks of 13 ducks can be secured for $50. Ex-State Senator Terry Link pleads guilty to tax evasion, by Peter Hancock, Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Former State Senator Terry Link pleaded guilty in federal court Wednesday to a felony charge of tax evasion. Link, a Democrat from Indian Creek who resigned his seat last week, admitted in a plea agreement that he willfully underreported his income on his federal and state tax returns from 2012 through 2016. Specifically, the plea agreement noted that in 2016, Link reported income of $264,450, when in fact, he had total income of at least $358,309. The difference included $73,159 in money from his campaign account that he used for personal purposes. As part of the plea agreement, Link agreed to pay restitution of $71,133 to the IRS and $11,527 to the Illinois Department of Revenue. Federal sentencing guidelines provide a maximum sentence for tax evasion of up to 3 years in prison and a $100,000 fine. However, based on Link's lack of criminal history and other factors, his sentence would more likely be in the range of 10 to 16 months, according to the plea agreement. Link will not face immediate sentencing, however, because he also agreed to cooperate with continuing federal investigations, according to the agreement. If Link continues to provide full and truthful cooperation, according to the agreement, prosecutors could recommend a sentence of probation. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, September 17th, 2020. Please stay tuned.